All right, everybody, welcome back. Radical Russ here in Denver, Colorado. We are with Kaliko Castile. Liz Kaliko's with us here in the offices of Denver Relief with Kayvon Kalabari. Kayvon, thanks for having us in here.
Thanks for having me.
Kaliko, thanks for being here, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so stoked to be here in Denver in the land of legal weed.
I know. We're just a few days out from the Cannabis Cup, but you've got something that's far more important going on. You're running for city council.
I am for one of the two available at-large seats. So Denver has 13 districts, 13 city council seats, 11 districts, two at-large. I'm running against two incumbents. Both of them have been very unfavorable to cannabis over the last 4 years. And, the elections are May 5th, and ballots get mailed out today, April 13th, so time is ticking.
So some of these incumbents are going to have to maybe pay the price for not being on the right side of history, perhaps.
That's the thought. We have three or four now cannabis-friendly candidates, openly cannabis-friendly candidates out there, which hasn't really happened before in Denver municipal politics, and they're getting a lot of favor and getting a lot of attention because of that. They're definitely entertaining a different demographic that hasn't been talked to in these municipal elections. We had 30,000 people, registered voters, move here in Denver in the last 12 months alone, and that's how many votes it took to win second place last time. Why did those people move here? I think we could probably assume cannabis had something to do with that. So there's definitely a different demographic here and a lot of opportunity to shake things up.
Would this be the first election where we could see a demographic bump in voting because of cannabis, or has it been seen before?
You know, I think we've seen the cannabis vote come out for like Amendment 64 here, which passed on the statewide level, and for local initiatives that we've had here in Denver. But what makes this one really unique is that it's an all mail-in ballot. So we're going to engage a lot more young folks and a lot more cannabis consumers, I think, because of that, people that didn't feel like going and waiting in line on election day.
Well, you know, and obviously when Obama came to town and was campaigning in 2012, marijuana legalization got, you know, far more votes than that. And I mean, obviously talking about the people who have moved to Colorado and made that an issue. And I know you have other issues, obviously, in your platform other than cannabis, but sticking to just cannabis specifically, I know you had mentioned something about, like, places in Denver have to close by 7 p.m. Are there certain things that you're looking at specifically that, you know, that kind of shows a way in which the cannabis industry is being treated different than other industries?
Yeah, certainly. And I should note that I certainly don't want to be known only as a cannabis candidate, because I think that's really failed a lot of folks that have tried to run in the past. They get pegged as that, and unfortunately that stigma still exists and persists, and it's been a very negative to their campaigns in the past. But yeah, I am fighting for the rights of the cannabis businesses and for caregivers here in Denver, because we have a city council that's been very degrading to the industry over the last 4 years. Something you mentioned, the marketing. You know, we can't market like alcohol does. Amendment 64 on the state level was supposed to equalize us and put us on a level playing field. So the fact that we can't have any public advertising is extremely unfortunate and unfair. But even more so than that, that's detrimental to the industry, is the fact that here in Denver, we have to close at 7 p.m. on the retail side, whereas every municipality around Denver is allowing dispensaries to stay open until 10 p.m. or midnight. We have 150 to 200 dispensaries in Denver. We have 5 to 10 people working in them at any given time. That's 3 to 5 hours a day. We're talking thousands of labor hours every single day that we're losing, and probably millions of dollars of tax revenue for no real reason, when alcohol, these liquor stores are staying open until midnight, and that's a drug that kills 1 in 7 working age Coloradans, so extremely unfair. We've got some caregiver issues. The city council just passed a couple weeks ago that pretty much it's digressing back into prohibition, in a sense, and recreating the definition of what a cannabis plant is, and it's really setting a lot of people up for potential failure and legal issues on the private caregiver side. And then we've got, the public consumption issue. We've got millions of people coming here every month to purchase cannabis legally, but they don't have a place to consume it. We've got corporate hotels that make up the most of what we have here for lodging. They're never going to allow cannabis. We've got a lot of boutique hotels that have opened up, but because of the Colorado Clean Indoor Air Act, 75% of those have to be non-smoking, so that doesn't really solve the problem. We've had public consumption tickets and citations rise 500 or 600% in the last 12 months alone, so we need to provide a place for people to legally consume, because we're letting them purchase it. So my thought is not necessarily to go towards cannabis cafes right off the bat, because I think, one, that keeps the cannabis industry segregated, doesn't allow us to just kind of immerse ourselves inside mainstream society. I think that the solution, at least to start, and I think cannabis cafes are great in the long term, don't get me wrong, but I think the baby step in the way to get people to agree with it, to have an easier discussion about it, is to implement it within our existing venues and bars and restaurants. So allowing a place that has a liquor license to take a designated interior space and designate it for vaporization, and to have an exterior space that's, you know, fenced in and within that liquor license's boundary, where cigarettes can be smoked outside to allow for the combustion of plant material for cannabis. And I think that would allow us to, again, be visible and integrate in with people that don't consume cannabis, to prove that there's nothing different about us. We just choose to intoxicate with a different substance.
You know, you're speaking of the recreational side in Colorado, and then there's the medical side in Colorado. Are there any issues in that respect, in reconciliation or trying to equalize the prices, hours, anything between the two that you're looking to address?
Yeah, you know, they haven't really put in any caps on production on recreationally like they have in some of the other states, Washington, for instance. So we're actually seeing people kind of run amok with regard to production. We're already seeing prices on the recreational side drop to around where they are on the medical side. But we have people building in Pueblo, for instance, facilities that are 5, 6, 10 times larger than what they're growing out of now. Mm-hmm. So if we're already hitting those prices on the medical side with this 21.12% sales tax and 15% excise tax, but people have, and we're meeting that demand, why are we building facilities that are that large? Where's all this product going to go? And I think that's really a product of people who don't understand cannabis coming in here and having too much of a commercial interest in it, just saying that, hey, if we grow it, it's going to get sold. But that's not the case. And I really see some big names in Colorado falling this year because they're going to focus too much on the B and C grade product, the Coors, the Miller, the Bud, and not focus on what I think Colorado's moving towards, which is more like the craft brew industry. A place like Denver, or Leaf, or Lee Eagle, or some of these other places out here are focusing on producing all of their products in-house and producing it in more small batch environments so that you can charge a higher price and engage more with the connoisseur, which I think this market is really quickly developing. You know, as more people try more strains of cannabis for more shops, they're starting to understand the contrast between what is good and what is bad, and it's really starting to separate itself. But as far as medical, there's a lot of people that are trying to kill medical right now. They're trying to make it sunset, and a lot of that has to do with the lobbying power on the recreational side, which is really unfortunate because a lot of these recreational stores have really disregarded the medical patients since they opened. We've seen far fewer products related to CBD or non-smokable products being offered. Now, we saw a lot of recreational stores come from medical and have people drop that medical license. So patients are really kind of getting disregarded. And then back to that caregiver issue I was talking about earlier, they're getting attacked in this regulated side and in this kind of unregulated caregiver market. So I hope that other states that are trying to marry the two and have two right in parallel together, recreation and medically, can learn from the issues that we're dealing with here in Colorado right now.
What do you think could be done to incentivize, if there was one system, or if it continues the way it's going, to incentivize these shops to carry those things that the medical people need? Tax breaks or any sort of incentive plans?
Well, I think that we're going to start to see really competition just dictate that product development. It's going back to talking about prices getting so low, people are going to have to start to find ways to differentiate themselves. So I think one that's going to be done through packaging and branding, which is something this industry hasn't really focused on too well. So that's moving in that direction. But I think in that new product development, we're just going to have to see it because people are going to have to do so to survive. And I don't know, you know, what other states are like. I think it's going to take a little while to get there. But Colorado, because we've had this regulated market for so long, we do have people looking to stop smoking or stop vaporizing and stop taking dabs, and they understand that even though it is healthier than drinking, even though it is healthier than smoking tobacco, it's still not necessarily great for you in some respects, especially if you're dealing with a medical condition. And people are moving towards trying to, you know, patches, for instance. I think just by having those on the market and people seeing their efficacy and the fact that you can get more out of a little because they are much more efficient with entering the bloodstream, they can be integrated more into your life without people seeing you consume. It's more discreet. I think we're going to see the industry move into more of these lifestyle products, more so than the combustion and the traditional ways of consuming. I'll never leave it. I mean, I love smoking a joint. That's my preferred way. I'm never going to stop. But as we integrate more into mainstream, I think we're going to have to make those products more available if we're going to engage the mainstream and new customers.
like when we were talking about the other issues that obviously that you're focusing on in this campaign other than cannabis that's really setting you apart, what are a few of those that, you know, that you're focusing on in this election?
Yeah, you know, one of the main ones is affordable housing. We've had 100,000 people move to the Denver metro area in the last 12 months, 30,000 registered voters. We have 27,000 households being pushed out of Denver County because they can't afford to live where they have been for so long now. Our city council has set aside $3 million for new public housing, affordable housing opportunities, but has spent over $7.5 million in the last year on police brutality settlements. We're proposing spending $750 million on a I-70 interstate expansion that is unnecessary. It needs to be fixed, not widened. They're trying to widen it all with city money. Again, $750 million as opposed to the $3 million they're spending on affordable housing. We've criminalized homelessness here recently, which is extremely unfortunate because, again, we're taking people's homes, we're pushing them into the streets, and then we're criminalizing that. We have the police brutality issue that I mentioned that's getting worse, and children's services. You know, we have failing public schools here, as most places do in America, and we're not engaging kids. We're actually testing more on a daily basis in Denver than almost anywhere else in the world. Testing doesn't teach kids, right? I mean, teaching teaches kids. Kids need to learn. They need to be engaged to learn, not take tests. So it's my goal with my, I sit on the board of directors for the Colorado Youth Symphony Orchestra. I've been a Denver Kids mentor, big brother with three kids for now 8 years, and I've seen what little engagement post-school can do for folks. So I think if I can engage existing nonprofits, entities, programs that are after school to get them to provide a certain level of attendance or participation from Denver Public School students, that we can really show kids through entrepreneurship, artistic, creative programs that there is an alternative to what they're being taught in school. That's something that benefited me a great deal. I've been living on my own since I was 16. I started homeless in my entrepreneurial career 7 years ago, bootstrapped everything and got to where I am today because I saw that there were these opportunities out there and was engaged by these creative, unique people. And that's ultimately what I want to show other people.
Great. What is a way that people can kind of get in touch with your campaign? And if they want to donate, obviously you're heading into the last few weeks of the campaign here and every little bit is going to be crucial, any volunteer work or any kind of campaign contributions. Where can people go to find more out about your campaign?
You bet. Yeah. Kayvon for Denver, K-A-Y-V-A-N for Denver. KayvonForDenver.com is my campaign website. You can donate on there. I do need, obviously, all the money I can get. I just started this campaign in February, but I've already made a lot of noise. I'm considered the only competitor to the two incumbents. But these two incumbents have been raising money now for 4+ years, and I'm dealing with about a third of the budget that each one of them are. But I'm engaging people in a very creative way through sex spot comedy, putting shows in front of 40,000 people every year, through social media advertising, which they're not focusing on at all. My only campaign fundraiser this entire period was a roast of myself by 10 of Denver's best comics, and I'm being aggressive, and I'm calling people out, and I'm getting great earned media exposure. So I'm doing a lot with the little bit of money that I have, but certainly everything I get here the last 3 weeks will benefit me a great deal.
I definitely think just from the outside that you can tell that this is a campaign run by a grassroots movement, and I definitely think that, you know, you speak to a lot of issues that people don't hear talked about enough in everyday politics. So it's definitely, it's refreshing to see a candidate like yourself coming in and mentioning these issues. So.
I mean, I grew up from Safer, you know. I mean, I've been been in the cannabis advocacy here in Colorado for 10 years, and it came from working with Mason and having to do interesting things to get people's attention about topics that didn't have the attention they deserved. And I've really taken a page out of his book in that regard, so I hope it works as well as that did.
What are some of your social media contacts that people want to touch?
Yeah, at Kayvon for Denver on Twitter. I think it's Kayvon for City Council on Facebook, but if you Google Kayvon City Council, I bet I'm the only person by that name running. And then I've also got some great videos that are both funny and a little bit demeaning to the other candidates that I would encourage folks to check out. Those can be found on my Facebook page and on Twitter as well.
Excellent. We'll get them shared. Kayvon, thanks for joining us on the show and in the Weed blog. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you, Coleco.